Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, sweet lady. Welcome to the kitchen. Y'all already know what time it is. Sunday morning brunch is underway. We got some stuff to jump into. Y'all got 90 minutes locked and loaded right here on the World Wide Web with those chefs. I done took off this blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside, the kitchen timeless is alive.
Ow. Welcome to Sports City. TP Timeless is at the helm.
Feeling kind of Sunday.
Moses taking care of the Midwest. I'm TP Timeless holding down the East Coast.
TP, I am ready to back rock.
And the only thing I got, one thing to wish you people.
Good morning. It's a Sports City chef with Sunday the brunch with Mark and TP.
Good morning.
So kick back, relax, enjoy this everybody. Don't turn on the TV.
Good morning.
It's a Sunday morning brunch with Mark, the Moses, and TP Thomas.
Good morning.
So sit back, relax, in 2 hours of facts, and that's a fact, yeah.
The caller number is 917-889-9592. Like I said, you got the next 90 minutes locked and loaded with Sports City. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world, but you're here with the chefs. And I'm going to try and do the best that I can. I got to wait till my boys get here to help me out. But I'm going to get to one topic that actually is close to me, because I guess this is how I get to start off these shows while they get to settle into the kitchen and do their thing. I feel a certain way because I've actually lost people in my life to, you know, significant illnesses, or i.e. cancer, or other things that, you know, we can't stop, or we're trying to find, you know, a way to heal or cure people. And to find the fact that Eric Berry, the free safety for the Kansas City Chiefs, is back on the football field after missing an entire season dealing with the lymphoma issue is, you know, I guess uplifting, a heartfelt situation for him to get back out there. Now, I have several people out here in the Connecticut region that I know that are Kansas City Chiefs fans. And, you know, once they lost Eric Berry, they were wondering what they were going to do in the back end of the secondary for the secondary to come up and make plays, so on and so forth. They put so much stock into a guy like Eric Berry. And, I seen the introduction that they had for him in their first preseason game. And I must say, I'm not going to lie, I'm not a Kansas City Chiefs fan. I'm not going to lie, I did watch Eric Berry since he came out of the draft. It was so, you know, of an uplifting situation. Not only, of course, the Kansas City Chiefs fans are cheering for him, but his mom came out there on the field, gave him a big hug, and, like, they stood there for a little bit, knowing that how big of a value his life is more than the sport of football. And that's what he's saying. He's saying that this comeback is more than just football. I think it's more around his life and the value of him being out there on the football field. And then, you know, just watching that, seeing him go out there and make plays, seeing him make a tackle also, knowing that he's all right. You know, there were people making poster boards saying that they wanted him to play effortless, you know, like, and you know, go out there and give it his all, don't worry about things. And like I said, this was something that was real close to me, and I wanted to get this one out until the guys got here. And as I see, as soon as I you know, click back in and see what's going on in the kitchen, I got them here in the kitchen. So I'm glad I got that one out, unless they want to speak on this for two. Calling in by way of the state of South Carolina, the Brooklyn Knight himself, Mr. Knight, a.k.a. Nostradamus. Chandler, welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning?
Tired.
I'm sorry. I'm going to try and get you up. I'm going to get this coffee in you and see how you go. Bill, hey, please. That might wake me up. That might wake me up. Chandler, your thoughts on the Eric Berry situation with him and his battle with lymphoma all last season? He sat out due to the severity of the situation, and him being back out on the football field, your thoughts of, you know, if he should be out there, if this is something that, you know, with the doctor's clearance, are you supporting the situation? Your thoughts.
Well, I mean, if the doctors say he's good to go, then, you know, I'm glad he's able to play.
Okay, fair enough. That's why I'm glad I kept that one to a minimal to myself. I think Nacho is here also. Welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning?
I'm feeling good, early morning.
Okay. Any situation toward Eric Berry and his return to a football field after his battle with lymphoma?
You know, the thing about it is, you know, we hear this, and lately it's been, you know, coaches. We've seen a bunch of coaches get struck with cancer, incurable, curable, whatever it may be, whether it's, you know, whether it's college football coaches, NFL coaches, college basketball coaches, whatever it may be. And as of recently, there's been a couple of you know, athletes, and Eric Berry being the one of them. And the thing is Eric Berry, for that team, meant a lot on that defense. Not only was he the heart and soul at some point, but he was a very talented player. And what I would equate to their backfield losing Eric Berry would be the Green Bay Packers backfield losing Nick Collins. Now, Nick Collins was gone from a neck injury and was unable to finish his career that way. It was not a curable illness or anything like that. But to see Eric Berry come back, the way they lost him and the way that they kind of seemed lost in the backfield without him, they didn't really know what to do. And he really was an integral part of that backfield in my mind. So to get him back is, you know, obviously a great thing for him and his health and all the great things that, you know, beating a disease like this comes with. But being able to not only beat the disease, but get back to full strength and full health to play NFL football. Because there are times when, you know, we all know the detriment of cancer, weight loss, you get unhealthy, you're very unathletic. You know, the things that can happen with cancer physically to your body can prevent you from playing football again or any other sport. So the fact that not only did he beat this disease, but he got his body back to a shape where it could play football. And I know it was a short time. It wasn't even a full year, I don't believe. But the amount of time that he spent off the field, not even working on athletics, but working on getting better as a human inside, you know, as an inside in you know, the white blood cells and things like that, the inside of your body, getting that better before even, you know, lifting weights or running. The fact that he's back now and going to be able to play and been playing in the preseason and now he's going to play in the regular season, it's astonishing to me. It's really a great story. I mean, yeah, we hear about these players and these coaches, and coaches, when they go through these things and they come back, there is no physical. Yes, there's a mental above the shoulders stuff going on with coaches, but there is no physical form they have to be in. For him to beat this, get back to physical form and be on the field and for all intents and purposes, looked like Eric Berry. He didn't look too bad. So it's just, I would say, you know, to me, this is probably one of the best comeback stories there possibly ever could be. Not only because of, you know, beating the cancer, but being a Pro Bowler and coming back and quite possibly being a Pro Bowler again. And that's one of those things. And like you said, I'm not a huge Kansas City Chiefs fan, but I am a huge Eric Berry fan. I've been a fan from when he got drafted till now. So just to see this, it makes me, you know, it makes my eyes get big and it brings a smile to my heart because it really is amazing to see someone beat something like this.
And the crazy part about what you just said, that he might be potentially a Pro Bowl safety again, it's a good thing, and I hate to say it like this because I'm a Ed Reed fan. There's no Ed Reed or Troy Polamalu in front of him in the AFC to vote for. So, you know, one, he probably might end up getting the Comeback Player of the Year award. I'm pushing that he gets it regardless of how season turns out, unless he's miserable and terrible out there on the field. But if he's out there making plays, gets about 3 to 5, and I'm pushing it, 3 to 5 interceptions, if he could come off with that, Comeback Player of the Year award from what he's come from last year up until this point. And I don't think, if he's coming off playing decent defense, I don't think too many people will be in front of him to get that spot at the free safety position. Knowing how the voting is going right now, I just don't know how it's going to be anyway for the Pro Bowl. All of this, you know, all-star spectacle event situation is different now. But I think Eric Berry will definitely be out there now. Speaking on the spectacle of the game, people, here we go. So now I'm ready. You know, get away from that emotional stuff. We got some more stuff. We got a lot of business to get to. But now the situation around the Kansas City Chiefs going up against where Nacho is right now, the Arizona Cardinals. And the Cardinals actually, and I really don't even buy too much into the scores of what's going on in the preseason. I just like to see what's going on the field, what players are doing what, and I can't wait to talk about one player and what he did on the field because it's spreading like wildfire on what he did, but it's a different game. But here's who I'm looking at because I have been picking on him for years in the kitchen, and he gets a weapon in Jeremy Maclin. And this is Alex Smith. Now, it looked like he got himself a new Lamborghini or something. He couldn't wait to throw a bomb, so he throws a bomb to Maclin, overthrows him, and then he had another pass on the outside, and he completed one. But I want to know how you guys feel about Jeremy Maclin being an addition to the wide receiver corps. Do you think this is a situation where they could actually turn up the offensive prowess in the passing game? Because we all know, and I think this might be NFL history, it might have happened before, but I'm actually thinking that this is NFL history, that they went an entire season without throwing a touchdown pass to a wide receiver. Now, Maclin has that speed that could break a game open. I'm wondering if you think that Maclin could help Alex Smith score some touchdowns at the receiver department, or do you think Alex Smith is still a struggle at the quarterback position? Nacho, I'll come to you first.
Well, on that note, since we were speaking about him yesterday, Chase Daniels now has more touchdown passes to wide receivers than Alex Smith did all of last season. But the thing is, you're right. He came out, and it was the first play of the game. He went deep. Now, you say he overthrew him. To me, it looked like it was right on. That corner was playing stout defense right on top of the receiver. I think if Jeremy had a step on him, that might have been a completed pass. And you know, albeit if he doesn't make that tackle – that could be 6 points. So I get it. He's happy. He's got the Lambo. He wants to try it out. It's preseason. I'm in love with it because that's what he needed. He needed that confidence boost in him for him to play a little better. And we talk about him not throwing touchdowns to receivers, and that's a big thing. But he wasn't really the touchdown thrower in all of those years that he's been playing. He is the quintessential game manager. Don't turn over the ball. And when you need to, you can make a big play, a la 49ers, when he went up against the Saints and he drove down the field and got that touchdown to take them to the Super Bowl. That is one of those things that Alex Smith can do. He can manage the game for you and make one big play when he needs to, but he hasn't had the team around him, a la like a Seattle Seahawks team, so he can get on and go to the playoffs and do multiple things. And I think that's what they're trying to do now. They got him the weapon. With Maclin, they also still have Jamal Charles, and that defense is stout with a couple good linebackers and one of them who's half a sack away from breaking the record. So they're going to be, you know, pretty good on defense. So I think this is the perfect setup for him. Now, I understand no throwing touchdowns to receivers last year, but who were his receivers? Dwayne Bowe, and that's it. And they just couldn't do anything offensively with those receivers. I think now with Maclin, the way they've got everything set up and the way Andy Reid is setting up this team, how he wants it set up, I think this is going to be a good season for them. I'm not going to go out and say multiple touchdowns, 15, 20 touchdowns or anything like that, or 25 touchdowns and 10 of them to receivers, stuff like that. He will get his touchdowns. They will get their points. And I think he feels comfortable now with the receiving core he's got. And we don't expect to see no touchdowns to receivers this season. I think that was an anomaly for that team, and I just think he was trying too hard not to make an interception, and I think that was I think last year was a case of him being too safe rather than be sorry.
Chandler, your thoughts on Maclin returning to a system that he knows pretty well with Andy Reid coming from Philadelphia, both of them coming from Philadelphia, Andy Reid leaving a few years before him. Do you think that this actually, you know, revs up this offense a little more with Alex Smith at the quarterback position? Or is this a situation where we have to wait and see what Alex looks like in the midst of the regular season and what these defensive schemes throw at him? If they send pressure at him and make sure that he tries to get rid of the ball as check down to the tight end. I mean, so many things could happen in between this offense. But your thoughts with Maclin returning to an offense that he knows with Andy Reid?
I think that this is a make-or-break season for Alex Smith because of the fact that they went out and got a Jeremy Maclin and guys like that. I think Alex Smith better start out like a house of fire or he'll be on the bench. He has no more excuses. I'm tired of hearing about, he's just a game manager and he's trying to throw us. I'm tired of hearing that because at some point you got to take a shot down the field. At some point you have to take a chance. At some point in every game, the quarterback has to make one throw. You don't have to make a bunch. He has to throw. There's a time in every game where you have to make that one throw. Alex Smith is afraid to try to make the one throw. So I think with the addition of Macklin and what they have there now offensively as weapons, I think Alex Smith better learn that he better start taking some shots down the field or he's going to be sitting on the bench. And I really, truly believe that. I think Alex Smith is on a really short leash. You can't get a weapon like Jeremy Macklin and still not be throwing the ball down the field. You can't. So we'll see what happens, but I think this is a sign that Andy Reid is about tired of Alex Smith, honestly.
Yeah, and Chase Daniel did get a good amount of reps out there. He threw for 3 touchdowns, like Nacho alluded to. Alex Smith, however, did not get a touchdown score throwing the ball. He did throw an interception also, too. I don't know if it's a bit of his, erraticness being back there, knowing what Arizona presents defensively, too. But I don't know, because they just threw a ton of money at Alex Smith a year or two ago. Extending his situation for Kansas City. So I don't know if they bench him, but if he's playing terrible, okay, there's 2 different variables in the situation. If he's playing terrible, that's 1. But 2, if these guys are having a low scoring total or he just isn't getting these receivers the ball, I want to say from 40 yards and out, like, because I really don't want to hold them to a red zone situation. They get to the red zone because it's tough to, get those passes into a receiver to a short quarter of the field right there. And I'm making an excuse for him. And this is bad that I'm making an excuse for a quarterback that I do not like. I kind of present this situation I have toward Alex Smith comparable to Chandler in front of Andy Dalton. I can compare the same situation. But I kind of want Alex Smith to step up and play better football, because this is probably the reason why Harbaugh seen this as a fine line and getting rid of him from San Francisco in the first place, and going with a guy like Kaepernick, because he's a scrambler too. Kaepernick is a scrambler too. It's not like he's a quarterback that can't throw the ball because he played D1 ball and got to San Fran and really didn't make a name for himself. And this is, the guy that in that draft, they picked him over Aaron Rodgers. So I want people to, Alex Smith, you got to step up to the call here. You got another weapon. I know this isn't like, Dwayne Bowe and those guys, but you still have pieces around you. You got a decent tight end core as well. But Jamaal Charles can't be the guy that saves you all the time. Or DeAnthony Thomas, knowing that this guy is a speedster, is not going to be the answer. Because believe me, they're going to key those running backs coming out of the backfield. They're going to force you to make passes. They're going to send packages to put pressure on you to make those passes, and I want to see it. I mean, enough is enough for Peyton manhandling the AFC West, or, Phillip Rivers being the only quarterback that could probably stand up to the call. Kansas City has made the postseason within the last 3 seasons. You have to be the guy. You are the captain, the most important position on the field, even though we debate about this here in the kitchen. So I had to get that one out there and had to spill into it. Outside of the Eric Berry situation in Kansas City. Anything else around this Chiefs game up against the Cardinals or Alex Smith that we get away from it?
Yeah, I got one thing, Ty. I think the 2 most impressive players on the field last night were Logan Thomas and Chase Daniels. I don't know if you watched the whole game. I tried to watch most of it, and I wound up, But I like the progression that Logan Thomas has made, the progress he's made. Is tremendous from last year to this year. I know he's still raw and still has a lot to learn, but if you just look at his game, and I know it was preseason, but again, you look at what the player does, not so much who he's competing against, but is he doing the right things? And Logan Thomas, man, listen, Carson Palmer, you keep getting hurt if you want. This kid Logan Thomas is coming for your job. And as far as Chase Daniels going, I know I give you grief about Chase Daniels, Ty, but if Chase Daniels was 2 inches taller, if he was just 2 inches taller,
right,
he could start for any team in this league. He really could, because the kid has heart. He can make all of the throws. The biggest problem with him is he's maybe 6 foot. They say he's not 6 feet. Okay, we all know he's not 6 foot. He's maybe 6 foot in cleats. He's not 6 foot. And that, teams are holding that against him. If that kid was 6'1", 6'2", Chase Daniels would be a starting quarterback, and I think a Pro Bowl quarterback in this league.
And what better of a situation was it for him to be in New Orleans behind Drew Brees, who was another guy that's under 6 feet, and they were competing for that job? It wasn't like Chase Daniels was sitting there holding that clipboard. Chase Daniels was actually trying to press the situation. That's why I said it, but then next thing you know, yesterday, found out that he was gone, and now he's in Kansas City, no less. So, I don't know if it's going to be a short leash for both quarterbacks now that you put that situation up here in the kitchen that Alex Smith, if he doesn't provide a good impact on the offense, if they go with Chase, or also looking at how Arizona threw a ton of money at Carson Palmer while he had a hot start to the season with the Cardinals. If Carson had one of those mediocre starts to the season like how it used to look when he was in Cincinnati, do they go to a guy that's a 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", type of quarterback that can move, is agile, and make those passes as well in Logan Thomas? Because we know we have to, you know, deal with the what you see is what you get type of Carson Palmer. So this is something that we do have to wait and see, especially with him out there in Arizona and him having receivers on the outside. I don't think that there's too many room for excuses or error for him with this, the Arizona Cardinals situation being Carson Palmer. Nacho, anything else before we get away from this topic?
And not only does that Logan Thomas scare me and what could happen, and this is what I believe could happen, and it could really set Logan back. They could start 2-0, Carson gets injured, Logan comes in, and they don't click right away. They don't win the next game. They don't win the next two. Now, as a fan, as an Arizona Cardinals fan, you're looking at this going, well, with Carson in, we're undefeated. With Logan in, we're 1-1 or 0-2. We want Carson back. So as soon as Carson can get healthy, we want him back. And I think that's the problem they had last year, and I think that's the problem they're going to have this year. Carson's going to start off good. They're going to win a couple games. He's going to get injured. Logan's going to come in, and because from now until then, he won't see first-team reps hardly ever. It's going to take some time for them to click. They may not win that next game or the next two games. And then that's when it comes in, we need Carson. We need that. That need word comes in as a Cardinals fan because we hear it year in and year out. All they need is a quarterback. And I think if they start off hot again, Carson gets hurt again, which will probably happen. Logan comes in and doesn't win right away. That could be detriment to Logan for the fan base heckling for Carson and even probably those coaches who want to win now. They might even throw Carson back in there sooner than later. So I know what Chandler's saying, and I agree with him. If Carson, doesn't watch his back, Logan will take that job. But the thing is, I think it's Carson's job to lose now. And the only way he loses it is via injury, which he will get. You know, I'm not wishing it upon him, but we already know the details of this man. He's going to get injured, and it's just going to be – I don't think it's going to work out well for them. And Logan may be a good quarterback, but it may not be for the Cardinals.
Now, here goes the interesting situation as you paint that picture, but Logan's the third-string quarterback. The backup is Drew Stanton. So, and knowing Drew Stanton knows Arians' offense and knowing how – Stanton did well while Carson Palmer tore his knee up again, was out for the season. Stanton had some weight on his shoulders, but Stanton didn't really get too many reps, only threw three passes. So this is going to be ideally what Arians likes. If Logan is still too impressed, I think for the remaining 3 weeks in preseason, now we have a quarterback dilemma at the second string, which you always see, especially throughout training camp and preseason. But right now, I think Stanton is the clear-cut guy to be the number two option for Arizona. So we'll see if Logan actually fights and gets to that spot to be the backup for the Arizona Cardinals. But this is an interesting situation because if Carson is the one that does end up injured, throughout the season, I wonder if they're going to go with a quarterback that is more mobile in Logan Thomas, or if they go with a guy that already knows the system and did well before getting injured in Drew Stanton. Because Drew Stanton did well before he got injured right behind, Carson Palmer last season.
And let's not forget, though, with Drew Stanton, he's been on a few losing teams. He's been quintessential losing quarterback who was injured last year also. So right now, if you're a quarterback's coach or if you're the Cardinals coaches, you're looking at Carson, who's probably going to get injured, Drew Stanton, who's, for all be intents and purposes, a losing quarterback who's probably going to get injured as well because he can't move well outside the pocket. And those three passes yesterday, I don't know if you watched them, they were horrendous. I think one got batted down, one was at the knees, and one was blatantly 5 yards off target. I don't believe Drew Stanton's anywhere near what they want Logan's the guy for them. So we will see. And you bring up a great point with Drew, but I think they're focused on Carson 1, Logan 2, and Drew just to back up in case all things go to HE double hockey sticks and they have to use him. But looking at Drew yesterday, albeit five plays, he looks horrible. And I know it's nitpicking, but even him handing off the ball, it just didn't look right to me. It just looked really off. And as a quarterback should do it, selling the play action, selling those things, he's just not really good at it to me. So I'm not really hype on Stan being that second-string quarterback. So I think Chandler hit it on the head, though. By first game season, if Carson isn't injured, we may have Carson 1, Logan 2, and Drew on the outside looking in just in case those two get injured. But let's not forget, Drew was also injured last year too.
Right. Well, like I said, he knows more of the system. And just like Chandler said, he's raw. And as we look at the depth chart, Stan is the number two guy, like I'm saying. So we'll see if he's got one. I'm not knocking Carson out of that position. He should end up being the starter for the remainder of the season. I'm looking at him trying to get different week 1 to week 17. But right behind him is Drew Stanton, unless Drew ends up messing up. Because Drew, regardless of the situation while he was in Detroit or regardless of why he was in Indy without Peyton and things didn't fall into his lap, he came to Arizona and was winning games with the Cardinals last year before he got injured. It wasn't like he was actually on loser's row. He was putting things together. So we'll see how this gets done. I want to move forward because I got this. Now, Chandler might not like this next topic that I'm going to get to, but I actually like it. I actually love it, even though I'm not a fan of the respected team that he's a part of. Phillip Rivers get a contract extension, and $65 million of it is guaranteed. Now, y'all all know I'm a big Phillip Rivers fan. I've been with him since the draft that him and Eli came out of, and I felt a certain way because Archie stood up and said, my son's not going to a losing team, and stood up on the stage until Eli got the trade that he wanted, ended up going to the Giants, and Phillip Rivers, well, he went from the Giants to San Diego. And I always pushed for Rivers to get the job done, whether how far he could get. He led that team to an AFC championship one year going up against Brady, and him and LaDainian Tomlinson were injured in that season also. But knowing how much Rivers means to San Diego Chargers and knowing that they're trying to turn things around, but to the start of this season, he will be playing without Antonio Gates due to the suspension that he faces. Your thoughts on Phillip Rivers and his extension? Is it worth it? He's going to be the quarterback in San Diego for quite some time after this extension as well. Chandler, I'll come to you first to set this thing off.
Well, the Chargers are going to get exactly what they paid for, which is, you know, really mediocrity. They haven't won anything with Phillip Rivers. You know, they have some good runs. They get in the playoffs. They lose in the playoffs. They don't make the playoffs. They get close to making the playoffs. They're getting exactly what they paid for. The fact that they extended him says to me that the Chargers aren't leaving San Diego, is what it says to me. Or they told him they're not leaving, and he said okay, he believes them. That's really what it says to me. I don't see any significance other than that because these are still the Chargers, still the same team that they've always had, which is a team that should do a heck of a lot better than they do, but they won't. Antonio Gates, he's missing four games because of a suspension. Okay, he misses four games on average a season anyway because of injuries. So there's no difference there. They still haven't gotten a tight end who actually will play all 16 games. There's a thought for you.
Right.
The running game is still suspect. It's the Chargers.
They got Melvin Gordon now. They got Melvin Gordon
he's
now.
A rookie, and he's a rookie. He's a rookie who hasn't shown us anything. So right now the running game is suspect. Until we actually see him, you know, play a season, stay healthy, and not succumb to Chargeritis, you know, which is a really good player gets in the league and suddenly they become injury prone or mediocre. Until that happens, though, this team is okay. I'm glad Phillip got his money. You know, I'm always glad to see a player get their money. You know, get your money, but I don't see really where it does anything for the Chargers but give them coverage as the team gets older, even older. And gets worse. Now they can blame Phillip Rivers and say, well, we had to give Phillip all that money. We can't afford to build a good team.
Now, that makes a ton of sense right there that they can't put a lot of this blame on the shoulders, because we all know Phillip Rivers, especially in front of the media, you know, likes to point blame or see something going wrong, and it is not really his fault. That is the one flaw or knock that I have toward Phillip Rivers, but he now has the most guaranteed money in the NFL right now, and this is over what we just seen happen with Russell Wilson, i.e. two different quarterbacks that came from North Carolina State. Now, one, Russell Wilson ended up graduating and leaving Wisconsin, but that's another thing. But both of these guys are the NC State quarterbacks getting the most money guaranteed at the quarterback position. Says something. So I do like that, the little mantra that I've seen outside for this one. But, you know, like Chandler said, now this is really the make-or-break situation around Phillip Rivers. Do you really go out there and earn that money? I mean, you've put up some gaudy stats while you've been out there with San Diego. Like Chandler said, you've gotten to the postseason. The closest you got to a Super Bowl was the AFC Championship, falling short up against the Patriots, losing to Chandler's Jets no less one time in the postseason while the Jets had to go across country up against San Diego and win that game out there. Also came up big up against Cincinnati and beating them in the postseason, but falling short again. So Rivers has had his stint of getting this team to the postseason. If everything goes right, he has decent receivers around him. He has youth around him out there in that receiving core too. So this is where, if things go wrong, there is no more him talking like a badass, excuse me, Sports City, or pointing fingers. They get to look at number 17 to get the job done or not. So we'll see how this does pan out. Nacho, your thoughts on another guaranteed situation of money going toward Phillip Rivers. He's extended with $65 million of it guaranteed.
And this is where they're going to pay Phillip Rivers for the talent on the field and not the production of the team, as where Seattle paid on the production of the team instead of the talent of the quarterback. Phillip Rivers is getting his money for the production he puts on the field, not necessarily the outcome of wins and losses, Super Bowl wins or playoff victories. So there are two different variations of thinking here with Seattle and San Diego, and whether you agree with either one, I think they both got it right in the fact that they gave the guys the money that they quote-unquote deserved. So Phillip Rivers getting this money, and Chandler kind of hit everything on the head. There's nothing I can really say other than reiterate his topics. As long as they can stay healthy, as long as Antonio Gates doesn't miss another four games due to injury, and as long as Melvin Gordon comes in and bees the stud that we expect him to be, yes, they can win some games. They'll make the playoffs. They'll come up short, and they won't make the Super Bowl. That's probably what will happen if all things go right for San Diego. So, you know, they paid the man, and I think this is the underlying topic, like Chandler said, down the road when they have no money to pay and pick up these free agents or anyone out there, they will come back and look on this and say, well, we had to pay Phillip or else he was going to leave. And that'll be a thing, a mantra for San Diego for the next couple of years when they don't sign big key free agents, when they don't make that second contract big enough for players and they walk out the door. Who knows what happens to Melvin Gordon if he stands out and is an excellent player and becomes one of the best in the league, and he just demands more money than San Diego can give him. And they have to lose him after his rookie contract because of this contract. Things like that can happen, not saying they will, but, you know, it comes to question sometimes what these front offices are doing, especially in a front office like this who is teetering on moving the team, who a quarterback who is advocate about not leaving San Diego. He's very adamant about not leaving San Diego. So when you've got all these things and questions around, to make this big a sign, to make this amount of money, to make him the highest paid guaranteed money quarterback in the NFL, I don't know if it's great for the team's overall. Like Chandler said, what can happen in the future? But as for right now, they're getting what they paid for, just like Chandler said.
Okay, and since we are here in this division, and like I just said, something with the AFC West Kansas City Chiefs and also the AFC West San Diego Chargers, with what's going on with both of these teams, who poses a bigger threat to upseed or get rid of, I guess, the dominant Denver Broncos in this AFC West, or do the Denver Broncos stay atop the division with Peyton Manning? In his what? I really want to look at it like this is his, 16th, 17th year in the NFL. Do you think it remains the same or do things change? Chandler, I'll come to you first. Which team do you think, and I could also throw Oakland in this situation. Do you think one of the three teams upseeds these guys or are the Broncos sit atop the division still?
It should be Kansas City. Okay? It should be Kansas City. It should be San Diego. There's no reason that the Broncos have been controlling this division if you look at the talent of the two teams, the team in Kansas City and the team in San Diego. I mean, if you look at them honestly talent-wise, how in the hell do the Broncos have a stranglehold on this division? It doesn't even make sense. So, yeah, I'd like to say Kansas City.
Is it the play of Peyton Manning or, you know, him being in that locker room and in the huddle that kind of, you know, demands these guys to step their play up for Denver? Or do you think it's more or less that, a lot of these teams that are in the AFC West just kind of, you know, cower down while they see number 18 making plays, on the field?
I think and I hate doing this, but, yeah, I think it's a flaw in the character of both of these teams. I truly do. I think both of these teams are content. There's there's something with these organizations where they're content to be almost good enough. You know, they're content to be almost good enough, but not quite. Because, I mean, Peyton Manning is a statue. I get, oh, Peyton Manning. Listen, there's a reason that the man has only won one Super Bowl. There's a reason for that. And this team might be in the playoffs every year, but there's a reason he's only won one Super Bowl. So how you let this man take a stranglehold on this division with the talent you have, I don't know. I'm going to say Kansas City to me. Kansas City's supposed to win this division this year. If they don't win the division, then you know what? If I'm the owner, somebody got some explaining to do, okay? Somebody got some explaining to do. San Diego, I don't think San Diego can challenge for the division unless Melvin Gordon turns out to be the monster he's projected to be. But Kansas right. City should be the hands-down winner of this division. They should be. Peyton Manning is going to be Peyton Manning. He is going to lose arm strength as the season goes. He's going to become more of a statue. Remember, Gary Kubiak is now the head coach in Denver. And Gary Kubiak is the guy who says, this is the play I called. You will run the play I called and not change it, Peyton. Start with all the hand signals. Start with the Omaha. Start with the nationwide is on your side nonsense and call a damn play and run the damn play I called. Okay? That is going to cause a problem. That is going to cause a problem because you got two headstrong guys, two guys who believe in their heart that they're right about what they're doing. And Kubiak's the head coach, so guess who's going to win? So I'm going to say it should be Kansas City.
And the interesting thing about that is sometimes, and I don't like to do this because I'm not a Peyton Manning fan, but sometimes Peyton plays with that audible game and doesn't change the play. So we'll see how this does end up panning out between him and Kubiak, and I actually lost the thought that Kubiak is running the show back there in Denver. So we'll see if Peyton doesn't have it all, you know, those calls that he's barking at the line of scrimmage before he sets the playoff. But you already have somebody in the bag that'll actually upseed this team out of the first place of the AFC West. So that's one. Okay, so now to your thoughts on if one of these two teams that we just talked about, being the San Diego Chargers and before the Kansas City Chiefs, who do you think it at, or if let me say this right to Mr. Silver. I got to get this right to Mr. Silver. You can also add the Oakland Raiders in there also. So if you feel the Oakland Raiders can do this too, you can include them. I won't poo-poo their situation either. But do you think Denver sits atop the AFC West, or do you think one of the three that we just mentioned will upseed these guys?
You know, Chandler kind of hit it. It should be the Chiefs. Their talent, their roster, the way Andy Reid put that together, that should be the team to get it. But like Chandler said, if Ricky Ricardo is running that team, there's going to be some explaining to do if they don't win it. It's going to be I don't know, and I like the way you put it, whether it's, you know, Peyton and his headstrong and the way he makes players play up to their stand, up to his standard, or whether it's those teams and just being fine with mediocrity. When we talk about the Kansas City Chiefs, a 1-15 season and a 15-1 season, that stadium's still packed, regardless of what's going on. Those fans, They do what they have to support their team in Kansas City. So I think that plays somewhat to the detriment of how a front office runs itself. Sometimes you can get caught up in, it doesn't matter what we put on the field, we're going to have a full stadium. They're going to be loud, and they're breaking loud records of the Seattle Seahawks, the champion. So when you're doing that, I can see where a front office gets mundane, where the front office gets very, very, you know, set in, it doesn't matter kind of what we put on, mediocrity, winning, barely making the playoffs, that does enough to get butts in the seats. And Chandler and I speak about it every week. Lining those pockets is all that really matters. And the Kansas City Chiefs, they line those pockets because those stadium is filled. They've got, you know, Chiefs fans from the young to the old, and that's how they do it down there. As for the San Diego Chargers, they're just stuck in their ways. And like I said, this is a front office and an owner who's not only dealing with on-the-field issues, but whether or not to move 90 miles north to L.A. Or 100 miles or however many miles, 190 miles, however many miles it is from San Diego to L.A., that's all that he's got to do, and he's got to figure that out as well. And that front office has to deal with Philip Rivers wanting to stay in San Diego, not wanting to leave. And like Chandler alluded to, what if they did lie to him? What if they did say, we're not going anywhere, and then next year they move to L.A.? What does that do to this contract? What does that do to Philip Rivers? Does he get up and retire? So as it pertains to whether each team is fine with mediocrity, I think the overwhelming answer is yes. I think they're okay with what they're putting on the field because of how okay they are in their pockets. They're not down in the bottom, and obviously they're not near the top, but they're making their money. So I don't think so much has to do on Peyton and bringing that Denver locker room up to his level. More or less it has to do with Kansas City and San Diego content with mediocrity because of the way that their fan bases and the way that the money keeps flowing in, almost regardless of what happened. We both said it, all three of us have said it, as it pertains to the Chargers, how they don't fill out and don't make up what they should, how their record doesn't reflect what they should. And that's been going on since Philip Rivers has gotten there and even before that. And they still have the fan base in Kansas City. We've seen them go through 2-14 seasons after making the playoffs. So they're still going to have the fan base. I think that they're both teams. It's more or less on both teams that they're content with mediocrity. And I'm not going to take the leap and say Oakland's going to make the playoffs or have a chance to rival, but they're going to play some tough games against this division. And they're on the up and up, and whether or not, you know, how they do is another situation on how they're going. But those two teams and the Chargers and the Chiefs, I don't think either of them are set to take it. It should be the Chiefs, like Chandler alluded to, but I think both those teams are really just stuck and set with mediocrity and making that money. And as long as that continues, there's going to be nothing that changes it in my eyes.
And so you're going with the Broncos to take the AFC West, correct?
Yeah, I think the Broncos do take this division, and I just think it's their division to essentially lose, you know, albeit dramatic injury like Peyton or 10 or 15 injuries on the total team, losing too many players. I think those are the only ways that Denver loses this division. I just think, like Chandler and I alluded to, they're stuck in their mediocre ways in San Diego and Kansas City.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, we do have Matt in the building. Matt, welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning?
I'm going to get right to it, Ty. What is this love for St. Louis you guys got going on? Picking the Rams to do well and Kansas City? Get out of here. The Denver Broncos in the last 3 years are 34-14 against the spread. And you know most of those games they're favored, so that means they're winning a lot more than 34 games. They're the cream of the crop in the regular season. Granted, he's a choke artist in the playoffs. Denver is a force that's not to be reckoned with. They're the top dog. And yes, I think the Chargers are the number two team. I do not buy into this Kansas City at all. Not one bit. I think maybe they're going to go 6-10. I think this is Denver's to lose, and until Peyton retires, he will win that division for the Broncos every single year, no matter what, hands down, going away. And the Chargers are going to be right. The Chargers are the second elite team behind them. They just have a choke artist at their quarterback at Philip Rivers.
Okay, and speaking on Phillip Rivers, how do you feel about his extension? And also, outside of that, you really feel the Chiefs are going to go 6-10 this upcoming season?
I mean, that's probably the worst-case scenario. Yes, they got a good coach. There's some talent there, but you don't have any wide receivers that catch touchdowns, and you're going to try to make the playoffs in the NFL? Give me a break. I'm sorry. That does not work. That does not work. That will never work. I think the best-case scenario for the Chiefs is 8-8. And I think Phillip Rivers, he's got all the potential in the world. He just chokes. They're going to have to really, really get some good running game for him to do well this year.
And now they do have Melvin Gordon. Now, just Melvin Gordon, you can't steer me wrong because I was one of the big advocates for you before you ran into Ohio State in that Big Ten championship, and they basically put 8 in the box on you and shut the doors on your 100-yard scampers that you were just putting together. But putting a running back like Melvin Gordon behind Phillip Rivers and see if he remains healthy and picks this up, you know, without missing a beat is one thing, but they have to wait a couple games until they get Gates back and to see the full-fledged offense out there in San Diego. But this is going to be interesting. Yes.
Sorry, Ty. I just, you know, he said 6-10. I had to go look at it real quick. They play the AFC North, the NFC North, the Texans and the Bills in their division. The Texans and the Bills and also their division. That's a tough task. 6-10
yep,
record. I
exactly.
Mean, I didn't look at the rec. I didn't look at the schedule in depthly. I saw a few key matchups, but looking at this schedule they have posted up, and the first four games being the Texans, the Broncos, the Packers, and the Bengals. You know, if Kansas City doesn't get this thing right rolling fast, they could be looking down the barrel of a 6-10 season. I'm not saying they are going to do that, but. It could be, and like I said, they've got the talent. I believe they do. I believe they have the talent. I know, you know, going up on last year's no touchdowns to receivers is a big stripe and a big thing for some people. But I think the talent is there. Andy Reid is there. He's a winner. I think they can do it. But looking at this schedule, it is a tough task. It's an uphill battle for the Chiefs.
I will say, yeah. Going back to Andy. Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Go ahead. Say what you're going to say. I'm going to go to Chandler next.
I don't know if y'all remember when Andy Reid, I'm sure you do, when he was with the Eagles and they went to the Super Bowl, he was making some very questionable calls in that game. Just calls that you would not make when they needed, you know, big-time plays, crucial plays. He called that game off. They should have beat the Patriots, actually, to tell you the truth. But that was Andy Reid.
I mean, they did all they could in that Super Bowl. I mean, T.O. was going off. They couldn't stop T.O.
They battled, but I just remember there was some stuff. It'd be like 3rd and 10, and the guy would run like a wide receiver screen or something. And I just wonder sometimes what Andy. I don't get me wrong, guys. He's a good coach, but I wonder where his head at is sometimes in a game when the game's on the line. He just comes up with just boneheaded plays. Like, why would you call certain? You always have to be thinking about, you know, the down and distance and make sure that you, you know, throw it enough that you can get that third down. And I wonder about him sometimes at this play call.
Okay, Chandler, anything that you'd like to add before we get away from the AFC West debate?
No, I'm good.
Okay. The next topic that I want to get to now, I really tried to chill. I wanted to chill, but I have to go here, and it's within my division, right? Being the NFC North, there are two critical injuries that have happened. One with the Minnesota Vikings losing their offensive tackle, Lode Holt, who has a torn Achilles, is out for the season now. And also, the one that I really want to hit home on this situation, and I'm going to address this topic here in the kitchen. Chandler, I'll come to you first. The Chicago Bears, with their rookie standout wide receiver coming out of West Virginia, Kevin White, is looking to have surgery on his shin. They're saying at the least it'll be 6 games missed in the regular season. He could potentially miss the entire season. Now, here goes the interesting situation with the Chicago Bears, and I didn't really want to talk about my division or things around there, but I have to because it's sport talk and we got to do this in the kitchen. But you, being the Jets fan and the Jets organization, just picked up Brandon Marshall, the number one option for Jay Cutler out of that offense. And we all know about the erraticity, if you will, of, you know, Jay Cutler behind center in certain games, so on and so forth. And then the second option was Alshon Jeffrey, in which now Alshon Jeffrey is injured too, but he's only going to miss a game or so in preseason. So at least he'll be back at least probably week two or week three to play with the Bears. But they are already hobbled or shot in the foot, if you will, at the receiver position, in which this has to help Jay Cutler. Like, so now, and not like I'm sitting up here saying Jay Cutler can't get it done or he can't find a ray of light somewhere, but you're already missing the wideout that was supposed to fill the shoes. And I feel like I'm jumping the gun and saying this, but I'm going to say it. To fill the shoes of Brandon Marshall and them watching number 15 go to New York with the Jets, but also Alshon Jeffrey being set back too. Your thoughts on the Kevin White injury, how, you know, difficult this will be for the Chicago Bears, and also, you know, to look at Cutler in, you know, in a glass on this situation?
Well, it's two different things going on. One, with Kevin White, this was mismanaged because this injury happened during OTAs, okay? And instead of them taking care of it, they said, oh, no, let's just let him rest and rehab. But we're going to keep making him practice, though, because practicing and running around when you have a shin injury, that always helps the shin get better.
Right.
Always does. Keep running on it. Yeah, keep running on it, Kevin. You'll be fine. Unbelievable.
Right.
So, to me, their medical staff, their front office mismanaged his injury. They should have been taken care of during OTAs, and then he would just now be coming back for training camp. Instead, he could potentially miss the entire season. Okay?
Right.
That's one. You have the fact that, as I told you, when they hired John Fox, that Jay Cutler was not long for the starting quarterback job. And you started, you know, people say, oh, but look at the money. Blah, blah. John Fox does not care how much money you make. They are also rebuilding this team in John Fox's image. That's why they jettisoned Brandon Marshall. That's why they got rid of some guys. That's why Martellus Bennett, I think, will probably not start this. I don't care what anybody says, Martellus Bennett will not be a Chicago Bear for this entire season, because he's going to run his mouth, and John Fox will not tolerate that. So what I think now is happening is he's now set up perfectly for them to jettison Jay Cutler, be it either they bench him or cut him or whatever, because he's not a John Fox type of quarterback. He's not. And this team right now, everything is on Cutler's shoulders. And we already know Cutler has small shoulders. We already know that. We know Matt Forte is going to be hurt again. There are certain things we know. We know John Fox likes to run the ball. We know he wants a running back who's going to carry the ball every game 20, 25 times. We know his team is going to play defense. He doesn't have a running back who can stay healthy. He's got a quarterback with small shoulders, and he has no wide receivers. In many ways, this is setting up perfectly for him, because he can start getting rid of all these players he really wants to get rid of, and they can go into a full-on rebuild, which is what I think they were doing. They just were trying to kind of do it without anybody noticing. But the Kevin White thing, shame on management. Jay Cutler, you had a nice run in Chicago. You made a lot of money. But you might as well go ahead and you may as well just go into the coach's office now and say, go ahead and play Jimmy Clausen, because I doubt you're the starter after game four.
Wow. Clausen's already. Look, okay. One more before I start passing this around the kitchen. Your thoughts on the load hole injury, him being the tackle for the Minnesota Vikings. Does this loom big for a guy that you're high on, Teddy Bridgewater, him protecting his backside, and also Adrian Peterson as well?
Well, the load hold injury is a big injury, but it's not as big as it could have been, because they have some good depth in their offensive line. I know he's a, you know, Pro Bowl guy. I get all that. They have some depth. You also have a mobile quarterback, so that helps, because Teddy Bridgewater is not a statue. You also have Adrian Peterson. So, again, you know, Adrian could probably get 100 yards a game with one offensive lineman blocking for him. So it kind of mitigates it, as well as the other talent they have. And anybody knows that Cordarrelle Patterson actually showed up in a game, although it was a preseason game, he actually showed up in a game yesterday. So I like what they have. I think it hurts them But I still think that they will give the Packers a run for their money for the division title.
Okay, interesting. Matt, your thoughts on the situation, one, with Lode Holt being out for the season with a torn Achilles at the tackle position for the Minnesota Vikings, and two, with Kevin White potentially missing the first six games of the season or up to the entirety of the season at the wideout position, and this is outside of them already losing Brandon Marshall to the New York Jets as well as Alshon Jeffrey nursing an injury right now for the first week of preseason. Do we still have Matt? Okay, Nacho, your thoughts on the situation, i.e., whichever way you want to go. This is your respected division along with me, wherever you like to go, Minnesota or Chicago. I guess you probably could start with Minnesota first with Lode Holt situation, him being a tackle and, you know, trying to keep people off of Bridgewater and open things up for Adrian Peterson as well. And then Kevin White and the receiver issue that they have in Chicago.
You know, with the Kevin White loss, and that's big. Because with Jay Cutler and, you know, all joking aside and not trying to be too, too funny, but I honestly feel like if he's in the boat in the middle of the ocean, he throws a football, a corner from one of the other 32 teams will jump out of the water and intercept it. That's just how Jay Cutler is. It is his fault. I don't know what it is with him. He had flashes of what I would say brilliance. He looked like to be on the way to elite status as a quarterback 1 year in this league. He looked really good throwing the ball to multiple receivers, also Matt Forte, and then it just went downhill. Some equate that to the money, and some equate that to just that's who Jay Cutler is, and he balled out 1 year, and that was it. So, as it pertains to the loss of Kevin White, that's huge. I mean, you lose Brandon Marshall, you go and you pick Kevin White thinking, oh, that's the heir apparent, we're good. You lose a great receiver, you pick up one who's supposed to be a great receiver. So you keep pushing and you keep moving. And you got a gunslinger like Jay Cutler. Hopefully he just gets the ball in the area and Kevin White can do his job and get it. Now with that being gone 6 to 16 weeks, it's tough for them. You know, I was thinking the first game of the season against the Packers, 42-20. Now it's looking like 42-7. The Bears don't really have anything else to offer on offense. And to Chandler's point, John Fox is not going to let any of these players do anything they want. John Fox is a no-nonsense kind of coach. And especially when it comes to the quarterback, just leaving a place where you can't even speak to the quarterback. You can't say anything to Peyton Manning because he knows all. Peyton Manning knows everything. So I'm sure coming from that to this, knowing that Jay Cutler knows absolutely nothing and that he can just pretty much say and do what he wants, that's going to, you know, also give John Fox the pump up and the leeway to, you know, sit Jay Cutler possibly by week six. So it's just really hard for them to do anything now. Matt Forte will probably have 150 receptions and carry the ball every single down. That's pretty much their whole offense now. Matt Forte, and that's it. It's so sad to see him play on that team because, honest to God truth, on any other team, he's an elite running back, and he's probably one of the top two or three in the league, and no one will ever stop talking about him. But because he plays on that, he is forgotten about and probably one of the underrated running backs in this league. So next year we're going to see Matt Forte beat his previous record of receptions because of this. I do think it just puts more onus and more pressure on Matt Forte. We can talk about the quarterback position and how much pressure he has and what have you, but the way Jay Cutler plays, it really feels like he's got no pressure on him at all. The way Jay Cutler plays football, it feels like he has not a care in the world whether they win, they lose, whether the place gets blown up or whether, you know, lollipops fall from the sky. Whatever happens, Jay Cutler is okay with it. It doesn't bother me. NFC Championship game, don't worry about it. I'll ride a bike while we lose. It doesn't matter. Jay Cutler doesn't care. So this puts more onus, I hate to say it, a ton of more pressure on Matt Forte. And, yeah, we're going to see him ball out and put up gaudy numbers for running back, receiving and running, but it's just not going to help that team out. It's just really bad. And like Chandler said, you know, the best thing for a shin is to keep running on it. So
We can all tell you now how the Bears coaches feel, how needed, how much of a necessity Kevin White was. And now he's gone. So it's just all bad for the Bears, and they might be battling San Francisco for that number one spot.
And you don't think Forte is an elite running back? He's not in that conversation?
No. I believe he is. What I'm saying,
okay,
if he was on a better team, if he was on a team that it was not just him and so, you know, down in the dumps, everyone would be talking about him like that. And right now, it seems like everyone just says, he can do a little bit. Yeah, he's okay. And then there's the few of us that feel like he is an elite, great running back, and he's just getting undervalued and underappreciated there in Chicago. I definitely feel he's elite for sure.
And of course, management still won't, you know, they still play hardball with him, you know, to try and get this guy money. At the end of the day, I just can't see what they're doing with him. But the load hole situation at the tackle position, I think it looms big for Minnesota because, you know, looking at what they did in the first, preseason game, getting out there with Pittsburgh, they really didn't fly off the charts offensively, but they scored twice to get that out there, and they did well yesterday up against Tampa Bay, which I do want to get into as well. Trying to spill into that. But I am concerned for both of them, being Teddy Bridgewater and Adrian Peterson, because this guy on the outside is big, so I want to see how they fill that in with his backup at the tackle position, if this guy can still block decently and open up holes so these guys could either get Adrian Peterson to have over a 1,000, to get Adrian Peterson over 1,300 yards rushing, or also to keep guys off of Bridgewater, because to be honest, Bridgewater got sacked a lot last year. He got sacked a lot, just to say the least. Okay. And the Kevin White. Wait, I got you. And the Kevin White situation, I feel bad because they're trying. But just like Taylor said, too, this is real tough. Go out there and try to, you know, let that heal up on its own, or go out there and get reps with the team and see, you know, trying to keep the repetitions there. You know what I'm saying? I don't get it, because now they're saying the timetable could be him being back by week six or whatever, or miss six games, however that presents itself. But you're rushing him back. I mean, this is a shin injury. This is his wheel. You know, this is his moneymakers. Like, I don't know. I think he should be in a situation where you keep his leg up, keep him in the skybox. But if he's able to go out there and give it his all and can give you 100%, and knowing that this is your rookie investment that you picked up in the first round, I don't know. I think they need to watch this closely. Yes, Nacho, and then I'll get to the game that I was talking about.
And you know, I was going to get to that Minnesota game, and I didn't really touch on the tackle. And I just wanted to say real quickly that, you know, Chandler, again, he's on a roll again. And I'm not just saying that because he appraised me the other night. But when he talks about Adrian Peterson, and let's not, you know, I'm not going to hold any bars. And regardless if he's a division rival, on 32 teams, he can rush for 1,300 yards. There's no doubt about that. Adrian Peterson right now could put him plug and play on 32 teams in the NFL, and he's rushing for 1,300 yards. So the tackle position to him is not necessarily a big thing. I think it's more or less the onus on Teddy Bridgewater, him being his blind side, and that's the big thing. But the payoff for Adrian Peterson is he doesn't really have to worry about that much, because he can hand the ball off to him. So I think the tackle position, as much as it's made out in every other team and a lot of teams in this league, I think on this team, they are the most equipped to handle that. And you touched on it with him being a running quarterback and the fact that, you know, he can get out of the pocket and move, and he can still throw the ball and he can get you yards. I think them losing that starting tackle, as beastly as he was, they're the most equipped with, you know, the running back and the quarterback they have. They're the most equipped, not the most, but they're one of the best equipped to handle that loss than most teams in the NFL.
Okay, Matt, are you still here or no? Do we not have you?
Yeah. I apologize about that.
Okay, your thoughts on the low hole situation and also Kevin White being injured at the wide receiver position for the Chicago Bears?
Forgive me, what was the first thing you were talking about?
The offensive tackle for the Minnesota Vikings. Load Holt is out for the season with a torn Achilles.
Did he get hurt last night?
Yes.
They shouldn't have been playing him. I don't know what they're doing. Now they got a chance this year, and they get hurt in the first quarter or what?
He got hurt early in the game. I know that.
And you guys got to forgive me. I'm not really familiar with the Smith guy. Was he kind of a big prospect for the Bears?
So Kevin White is the wide receiver, the All-American wide receiver from West Virginia.
And he got hurt during what, practice? Or?
Yes, during practice he had a shin injury that it required surgery.
Well, the Bears are gonna have a tough time, and they always do with Jay Cutler, and obviously that Clausen character is not gonna improve them at all. So it sounds like a significant loss. I'm just not familiar with the player. I'm sure he had a good college career, but the Bears are just gonna have to rely on Matt Forte to do everything, and he can't carry that load. So you're looking at a mediocre team there.
Well, Matt Forte has carried the load for the past 3 or 4 seasons for this team. So it's nothing new to this guy. He is the only running back last year to lead that team in rushing and receiving, and the last running back to do that since LaDainian Tomlinson in the NFL. So that says a lot. I can think of Marshall Faulk, who being another running back to do that. Now, to spill into the game that they were in last night where Minnesota took on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and I feel like grabbing my shoe, wherever it is, I'm going to put it in my mouth, and me hyping Jameis and saying that he'll be out there and being successful. He had a shaky start, to say the least, but this is his first run, in preseason. He threw a pick. He got picked off, and he ended up scoring a touchdown on the run, no less. But I want to know how you guys felt about Jameis out of the gate up against the Minnesota Vikings yesterday and their matchup in the preseason game. Chandler, I'll come to you first.
I found it interesting, and I tweeted at Nacho, although apparently he wasn't looking at his Twitter last night, that you got a rookie quarterback and you start off with, you run 6 straight times. You don't start them off with a nice, easy pass just to get the jitters out. You run 6 straight times, and his first pass is on 3rd down where he has to make a throw to get a 1st down because, he's your rookie quarterback. Let's not, give him one easy throw to kind of get that off his back. I told you Lovie Smith is going to ruin this kid. I didn't like the way they started the game. You got the quarterback. You know Jameis is an excitable guy. He's probably got all this energy. You don't start a little bubble screen, nothing. Run. Oh, wait, 3rd down, now let's pass. Obvious passing situation. Now throw the ball. You've been amped up. You're waiting to throw. The ball came out, dude, it looked like it came out of a howitzer, and it was a throw that didn't need to be that hard, but you could tell he had so much nervous energy, man. If that receiver had, if it had been in his chest, it would have went through him. Okay, literally would have been a football-shaped hole going through his body. That's how hard Jameis threw that damn ball. He was trying so hard, and you could see it. And again, I blame the offensive coordinator, which means I blame Lovie Smith, because you didn't look at it, know who he is, and set up some easy throws to kind of get him into the rhythm of the game. Okay, later on in the game, as they got him into a rhythm, they start running a little bit of no huddle. They took advantage of all that excess energy that he had. You saw that he started making better throws. There was a couple of the receivers should have caught. It bothered me because apparently I was watching on my phone on NFL Network, and I had the other team's feed, and it was, Jameis is terrible. He missed his first 2 passes. Oh, he's playing terribly. He just threw 2 passes. How could it be terrible? It's 2 passes, dude. I think overall I'd give him a C. And it's about what I expected. I expected Jameis to come out and try to throw the ball literally through a wall. It looked like that's what he was trying to do. I had a feeling he would do that because of who he is, his personality. I thought the coaches would be smart enough to set up some easy throws in the beginning for him to kind of bleed that off. But Tampa Bay overall looked terrible in every phase of the game. They did not look good in every phase of the game. Seriously, they did not look good. Our defense didn't look good. The offense didn't really look good. Special teams didn't look good. They got a lot of work to do down there. A lot of work. But Jameis, like I said, I'd give him a C, but I think the coaches could have done a better job of easing him into the passing game.
And like I said, it was his first game, so that's my one little, you know, wavering signal that I get to stand on right now. But just like Chandler said, I think it was a ton of pressure on him to get, you know, get that pass off. And like I said, it was a bracket coverage that he didn't see, and that safety, you know, right over the top of that and picked him off. But he's going to take his lumps, and the good thing about it is preseason, so he gets to learn and learning the intricacies of how exotic a lot of these defensive coverages are going to be. Matt, your thoughts on a quarterback that you probably don't like now or since he's been in college football, being Jameis Winston and the run that he had in his first week of preseason play up against the Minnesota Vikings? Matt, are you still with us? Okay.
Yes,
not talking.
Yes, Ty. I'm sorry.
Yes.
I did see his run into the end zone. I heard his first three passes were pretty brutal. I think the kid has a lot to work on. Did you guys see that mini of straight out of Publix? He was running with the crab cakes.
I'm sorry, what?
Never mind. It was a meme that showed up. Jameis running out Publix with some crab legs. It was straight out of Publix or something. But anyway, the kid's got a hell of a lot of potential, but this year he's going to take his lumps, I think. He did not look too good throwing the ball yesterday. It looked like he was struggling a lot. So he's got a long way to go.
Okay, Nacho, your thoughts on Jameis Winston, first game in any NFL action, being a preseason game up against Minnesota?
Chandler hit it on the head, and I disagreed with him. I think it was yesterday when we were talking about it and how Lovie Smith would be the problem, and I said no, he would stay out of the way. And this is what Chandler was talking about, and I didn't quite listen, and now I get it because he is going to be the problem. Run, and then a pass. You know, we need to pass, so we have to, so we will. Not let this kid get acclimated to a game setting, not let him get acclimated to the NFL level and how fast this game is being played. You know, hand it off, and when you have to pass, make him pass. That's definitely not how you groom a rookie. Like Chandler said, it didn't even have to be a 5-yard, 1-yard, 2-yard pass. It could have been a screen, just something to let him know, I can complete a pass to a receiver at this level, and they can do something with it. You get that confidence building, and then you keep it moving. That was the thing I was most disappointed in. What we saw last night from Jameis is what I was expecting as it pertains to him playing and him throwing the ball. Now, whether or not the coaches got him mentally ready or prepared, or whether the coaches had the right plays on the field is one thing. But him, he has to make the plays regardless of what goes on. So I saw what I expected to see from him. We will see steady progression from here on out, and he will learn from everything. That is what I see from him. This is something that is the first preseason game of his rookie year, so he's going to make a lot of mistakes, and it's going to be some growing pains. And they're not going to end here, and they're not going to end in 5 weeks, and they're not going to end in 6, and they may not even end in 10 weeks. These growing pains will keep going until he figures it out. The difference between him and most NFL quarterbacks that are picked in the first top 10 is he will figure it out and he will get it done. It's not going to be the quick turnaround like some expect, but it'll be there. So I see this progression going steadily upwards, and I see him going in the right direction. I'm not thoroughly impressed with him right now, but I shouldn't be. Humble opinion and my perspective, he's at where he should be at now for a first game preseason rookie. So I'm just looking for the progression to go next game and next game and next game. And if we're in week 5 and he still looks like this in the regular season, then we can talk about him, you know, regressing or not being able to progress. But right now, week one of the preseason as a rookie, it's what I expected from him.
And maybe, you know, I'm giving Minnesota a little bit of credit because their secondary, they do have some interesting names, and I'm kind of biased even though he's not playing right now due to injury. I think he's out for the season, being Josh Robinson, but they have some names back there that can make plays on the ball and have speed legitimately back there. So that's one thing that he probably has to deal with that he hasn't seen in college football. And just like I said, the different packages that he's going to have to deal with, especially being in the NFC South, no less, where I think it'll be much easier because I can only think of one big name down there at the cornerback position being Browner that they just picked up from New England, but he's in a rough situation with the Saints as well. So, like I said, that was his first NFL action. A lot of people were waiting to see how Jameis was going to look, and I was one of the guys that thought that he would be a terror to a lot of these teams right now. And this is what he's going to go through until he gets used to it and accustomed to what sets that Love he's going to come out there with and the play call and so on and so forth. But I really don't want to peg it where he's trying to be and me talking about Lovey and it's like where he's trying to be more run balanced or run heavy, if you will, than be balanced in this situation and let, you know, Jameis kind of, you know, run his offense as need be. I think they got to accommodate him to be, you know, comfortable out there making plays out there. But it's going to be rough. Vincent Jackson didn't get that much play out there. He had one reception and also Evans as well. And Evans was the target on that play where he got picked off, too. So, like I said, this is a work in progress. They do have people that could come to Jameis. And like I said, this isn't a start to the regular season like he was with Florida State, but there is a start to a turnover. And I know this is something that Nacho was nailing home with him turning the ball over. So this is something that they have to watch. If he's going to be careful with possessing that ball, because he has those receivers that can make 7 or 10 yard plays and just move the chain. That he has those type of guys. He doesn't really have to take those shots downfield. But like Chandler said, you know that adrenaline was behind him to get that ball out, and he got picked off. The call is number 907. Yes, sir.
I'm sorry. The problem, I think, with Lovie Smith is we know who Lovie Smith is as a coach. We know who he is. He's Jim Caldwell. He's that guy. He's that guy who doesn't really need a great quarterback. He doesn't need a great quarterback. Let's keep that in mind, because the way he runs his system is designed for an okay quarterback, a quarterback who will make a couple of throws, not turn it over, and we're going to run. And in obvious passing situations, we're going to make the pass and let the player get us a first down. I think that having a quarterback like Jameis is a detriment to the team and a Jameis, because the system doesn't fit the quarterback. You look at the receivers he had. They have some offensive weapons. I mean, this is a team that if you look at them offensively, they should put up 27 points a game. Easy. Mm-hmm. Easy. They should put up 27 points a game without even trying. But Lovey's system is one that shoots for 17, and let's not let the other team score more than 13. You understand what I'm saying? So I don't know if the philosophy that Lovey plays with, I don't know if Jameis can work with that, man. I just wonder what you guys thought about it. I don't know if Jameis can work with that.
I truly feel that he's going to have to make this work somehow, some way. We'll throw around the kitchen and see how you guys feel about it. Do you think Lovey and Jameis can work or coexist together with the system and the quarterback that actually has the idea of win first? I'll come to you first, Matt.
I think it's a terrible combination. It's equivalent to Bill Cosby as Dr. Huxtable.
Nacho, your thoughts on the situation?
You know, it's kind of like Chandler's right and wrong. Jameis is better than that. Jameis will progress, and Jameis will be the quarterback that I believe he will be. Yes, I think Lovey will get in his way somewhat. That may hinder the progress, but I think Jameis is a better quarterback than that, and I think he's mentally ready. And he dealt with so much that 4 years, not that long, but 2 years after the fact, we still got guys talking about memes and crab legs. I'm talking about Jameis Winston has such a thick skin and a mentally prepared for this league that I think that Lovey, you know, calling the wrong plays and getting in his way is something that he will overcome. So, yes, to the effect of Lovey Smith calling the wrong plays when he shouldn't, probably hindering some of the progression by the way he's handling this, like Chandler and I alluded to, starting the game off by run, and then when you have to pass, you make a pass.
Those are things that you shouldn't put a rookie through, especially in the preseason. Lovey's going to do that. Lovey's going to do that. Jameis is better than that, and I do believe that. And see, this is I don't feel like Jameis Winston was going to fail in this league regardless of his coach. It was up to Jameis, and I think Jameis is there. And what I've seen and heard from him, I expect him to be a great quarterback in this league. It's just not going to take the amount of time that it took, you know, the few previous quarterbacks picked in the first round did. So it's going to take the years of progression, maybe a year, maybe less, a year of progression for him to be that great quarterback. But it'll be there. And I do think Lovey, to some degree, will hinder that progression. But I think Jameis, like I said, he's better than that. He's mentally better than that. And I think to his defense, he will grow from that. And he will learn that I can win without my coach, you know, hindering to my needs, doing things that I need or I want done. I can win without my head coach, so to speak. And that means if he stays with Tampa Bay, if Lovey goes or if he goes or however that situation goes out, he will have the confidence knowing that the next team, whoever he gets picked up by, the head coach, you know, whatever the head coach wants to do, he will be able to adapt and do that. So I put more of this on Jameis than I do Lovey, because I do think Jameis is ready for this league. The progression is not going to be fast, but I think it's there, and the talent is definitely there.
Really? More on Jameis than Lovey? All right. Okay. Fair enough. One last topic before we get out of here, and I guess I'm going to address it to Chandler because I think, I could get some out of Matt, too. It revolved around Ichiro, and Ichiro actually getting 4,100 in his 4,192nd hit and being up there in the conversation with Ty Cobb. 1,278 of his hits, which were in Japan, no less. Chandler, do you give him the credit of having a total of over 4,000 hits and being mentioned with Ty Cobb, or do you think this is more or less of a situation where he was playing pro ball in Japan and came over here, still had over 2,000-plus hits in such a short time playing Major League Baseball here in America?
Yeah, I do. If Ichiro had, well, and we can't say it because he probably wouldn't have been allowed to progress, but if Ichiro had started his career, remember, he came over here in his 30s, by the way. Okay, he came over here late 20s, early 30s. Think about that, okay? If he had been able to play his entire career in Major League Baseball, he would have those same number of hits. I truly believe that. The man is a wizard with a bat. He's a great ball player, and I don't care what league he played in. Japanese League, Martian League, you know, what was that planet they were from in Space Jam, whatever league that was. you know what I'm saying? Ichiro's going to hit, man. It's what he does. It's a tremendous accomplishment. I think whether Ichiro gets 3,000 hits or not, I don't know if any team will sign him long enough for him to get to 3,000, because he's still, I think, about 90 hits away, and he's not really an everyday player anymore. But whether or not, I think he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. Congratulations to him. And it just goes to show that just because you're not born in the United States or wherever doesn't mean you can't be a great baseball player. So, you know, Colin Cowherd, chew on that.
Look, I ain't even getting started with Colin. I'm going to leave him alone. Well, you know what? I won't pull too much out of you guys. We are at the doorstep of the show. I need closeouts from each of you. If you want to say something about each row of clothing, and either you, Matt, or Nacho, I was going to say Ignacio, but it's just because I see the letter I, and I'm seeing each row and Ignacio at the same time. So I was about to, but I give you the Nacho. If y'all want to say anything in closing toward each row getting his 4,192nd hit, you can, but I also need plug and close out for each of you. Matt, I'll start off with you. Thank you for coming to the brunch. Let's get a close out.
Guys, thanks for having me. I'm sorry I cut in and out, having cell phone issues again. I will say Ichiro is the greatest infield hitter ever. He legs out so many grounders. There is not a better infield hitter than him, and he's one of the greatest of all time. And like Chandler said, no matter where he plays, he's great. I want to give a shout-out to everybody in here. I need y'all for football season. I need y'all on your game. I need you picking me winners because I want to roll to Vegas and see Ty in December. Y'all should come, too.
Oh, they pushing the Vegas envelope already? It's August. It's August. They chill out. Okay, Mr. Silver, I need a plug, close out. Anything that you like to promote or speak on each row, if you like to, you sure can.
You know, just the little baseball I do know, actually, Ichiro, you know, he's one of my favorite just to watch whenever he was on, knowing that he came from the Mariners, as well as Randy Johnson. He used to pitch for my Arizona Diamondbacks that I root for. So, you know, just a little bit of, you know, commonality between the two players that I picked up on the little bit that I did watch, and I did enjoy watching him and learning that he did not play, you know, in the major leagues his entire career. That he went and played, I think it was from 92 to about 2000 in the Japan leagues and dominated there and then came over here and did the exact same thing. It made me feel, you know, just delighting to be able to see that, you know, a guy who could play in one league in one country and dominate that and then come to a major sport over here and do the same thing. We see basketball players do that, but to see him do that, in a sport that is so long and grueling and just it really is a hard sport to sustain sustained great success like he has. So I'm just, you know, just like I said, elated to be able to watch him throughout his career for the past 15 years playing in the majors. So on that, you know, great props to him. Again, we started the show off with Eric Berry, and I got to reiterate this. In this day and age when all we hear about is beatings, drugs, guns, explosions, fireworks, and the NFL, you know, people getting away with cheating, people, you know, getting away with beating on their wives, and some guys being damned and exiled for a video. It's nice to see a guy battle a life-threatening cancer, come back, and not only come back and be, you know, living and beat the cancer, but come back and, like I stated, to be football ready. And to become a Pro Bowler, and I put everything on it. I think he becomes a Pro Bowler this year. To be a Pro Bowler again after beating cancer, this should be the top story everywhere, and this should be everything we talk about. I don't want to hear about another gun case, another shooting, another firework, another, you know, throwing someone on guns or anything else. This should be the highlight of the NFL story, along with the two fabulous women last night, one who was reffing, and one who is an intern coach on the Cardinals. Those stories should be at the forefront of football right now. These other stories should be, you know, in the middle pages of some newspaper we never heard of. So I'm just really excited that the NFL is taking great strides as it pertains to women and the way that we have now women referees, women coaches, and the way that both teams and the Cardinals and the Chiefs welcome back Eric Berry and the way he's come back and just thrived. And I'm just so, like I said, I've been a fan of his for many years, and just to see him come back, it's just amazing. On a personal note, when I do the Madden, I do the franchise draft, he is always a safety I draft. And now I'm glad he's not taken off the game. I don't have to create him. Personal note there. At Nacho in the Box, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Sorry, Chandler, I didn't see the tweet last night. I went to sleep very early, very, very early out here. But sorry about that. And like we stated right now, we did talk about that, Jameis. So, again, hashtag back-to-back MVPs. And, you know, it's really early. But the way we looked last night, hashtag 40 points a game. Hashtag 14 wins. Let's do this. Go Pack, go, and y'all have a great night.
Here we go, Sports City. Here we go. Okay, well, Chandler, before you do your closeout, Gino had his surgery on his jaw, and they already have him throwing the ball. Now, we already talked about the Chicago organization and having White out there running around. Give us a closeout and also your thoughts on if you agree or disagree with them having Geno throw immediately after his surgery.
Well, Geno's doing that on his own. his team has basically thrown him under the bus, and his teammates have quit on him. Geno's just trying to salvage his career, so I don't blame him for doing that. The silence from his teammates and the lack of support is deafening. And as I said before, shame on all of them. Shame on them, really. But the other thing I did want to mention that I never got a chance to talk to you about, Ty, was when Dez got his contract, if you remember, I said that Dez had just set the bar for the other wide receivers, and he set it too low. T.Y. Hilton just got a 5-year extension. The number was $65 million. I told you, nobody's going to get more than Dez, Ty. They're not going to get more than Dez. Dez did these guys a disservice, whether you realize it or not. T.Y. Hilton, $65 million. $65 million. Not 70. Nobody's getting more than 70, and I think it's a shame because some of these guys, Dez Bryant deserved $100 million, and so did some of these other guys. T.Y. Hilton, if Dez had gotten 90, then T.Y. Hilton would have gotten 70. But because Dez took 70, none of these other guys are going to get more than 70. So, Dez, you kind of hurt your fellow receivers in that aspect because, come on, man, I mean, let everybody else make their money, too.
Well, Demaryius went first. Demaryius Thomas and Dez kind of got signed in a simultaneous situation with the same deal. So, you know, how Denver and Dallas were kind of in cahoots on how they were going to make that deal go down. So Denver and Dallas are the ones responsible in that retrospect. So I definitely understand where you're coming from. I definitely think T.Y. Hilton is probably going to be a mainstay with Indianapolis, especially where I feel bad at saying this. I think Andre probably has a legit 3 seasons. I'll go 3 seasons for Andre Johnson for that Colts team if they do end up keeping him there for that duration of time. And knowing they have Philip Dorsett there as well, they got rid of Reggie Wayne. They want to keep some shoe-in pieces around a guy like Andrew Luck. Kobe Fleet is going to be a name there as well. But we'll see how this does end up panning out. Just like I said, just like Chandler said, Dez might have made this situation a short calling for a lot of wide receivers around the NFL. But there is a highly paid wide receiver in the NFL, and he's wearing Honolulu blue. SportsCityChefs.com. Check out the website, the interviews, the blog, the chefs. I'll be back here tomorrow evening, 7 p.m., Monday Night Sport, wrapping this thing up, talking about this Eagles and Colts game, no less. Tim Tebow is set to play at least 2 to 3 quarters, they said. So I want to see if Tim Tebow gets out there and balls or not. If he does not play good ball, I will have a lot to talk about Monday. But the one thing I do want to say about that is why Tim Tebow continues to follow Mark Sanchez all over this NFL. All right, Sports City, I'm going to chill. I'm going to chill on that note. tell a friend that it's the chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.
Oh, welcome to Sports City. TP Thomas is at the helm.
Feeling kind of Sunday.
Moses taking care of the Midwest. I'm TP Thomas holding down the East Coast.
TP, I am ready to rock.
And the only thing, I got one thing to wish you people.
Good morning. It's a Sports City Chef with Sunday the Brunch with Mark and TP.
Good morning.
So kick back, relax, enjoy everybody. Don't turn on the TV.
Good morning.
It's a Sunday morning brunch with Mark the Moses and TP Thomas.
Good morning.
So sit back, relax, enjoy.